Welcome to the Art Talk podcast, where I tell the stories of art, artists, and interview people in the arts. I am Karin Merks, your host, and I am an artist, art historian, teacher, and mentor. This is episode 67 of Art Talk, and today I have a special guest, world-renowned textile artist Susan Hensel. So let me introduce Susan. Susan received her BFA, Bachelor of Fine Art, from the University of Michigan, with a double major in painting and sculpture, and a concentration in ceramics. She has a history, to date, of more than 300 exhibitions, 35 of them solo, 20 plus garnering awards. In the coming 2 years, Susan will Susan has solo and two-person and group exhibitions scheduled in Ellicott, Bloomington, Hopkins, Duluth, and the Garrett Museum of Art. And in recent years, she has been awarded multiple grants and residencies through the Jerome Foundation. She is a multidisciplinary artist with a 50-plus years career. She combines a mixed media practice with embroidery across digital and manual platforms. She also makes sculptures and wall art using the colors and techniques of commercial embroidery. And these artworks are designed in the computer and stitched out on the computer-aided embroidery machine. Apart from her own studio, she also has a gallery. And the focus of the Susan Hensel Gallery is on compelling objects, meaningful use of materials, and engaging sculpture. It is a gallery where experimental ideas and works of the hand join to create unique sensory experiences. It's a gallery workspace that presents 5 to 6 shows per year in an intimate space. Gallery is, by the way, also represented on artsy.net. Welcome, Susan. I'm really happy to have you as my guest.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure.
And so, I have to be honest here. Textile is not something I know much about, to be honest. But I remember during my PhD research in the archives that in the 50s, it was the Museum of Amsterdam. Then under Willem Sandberg, divided the museum in sections. And they took this from the MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art in America. So they had a division art, design, photography, drawings, etc. And then when Eddie de Wilde, the one I did research on, took over in 1963, he built on that principle. However, it became more and more difficult to make those specific distinctions. And for him, everything had to have an art aspect to it. So once, and nobody expected that, that was the fun thing, because he was all painting. He came back one day with the first ever textile sculpture of artist Jacoba Buick. Maybe you know her.
I don't think so, yeah.
I have seen textile sculptures by Sheila Hicks and Dorothy Akpene Aminuke, to name a few. But that is totally different from what you make. Mm-hmm. So how is your work unique to other textile art? And how much is your work walking the tightrope of design and art?
To be sure, textile art is mostly represented in design collections, which is fine if that's its intent. But there are people like Sheila Hicks, Marina Abramovic, and a bunch of other people, including Louise Bourgeois, for whom textiles were part of a sculptural practice. What I am doing that walks a line, and it really does, I am using as my primary medium a commercial process, but I am using it intuitively. Digital embroidery, for your listeners, is the stuff that's put on ball caps, sweatshirts. It's a home hobby thing, too. A lot of teddy bears are are stitched on various items. But what attracted me to it, and I was not expecting it at all, not at all. It was a total shock. I had attended the Minnesota State Fair, which is the largest state fair in the world, they tell me. It's huge. I had no idea. I'm a transplant to Minnesota from New York State and Michigan, which are much smaller in terms of how they do fairs. My idea of a fair was, you know, a few cows, you know, 4-H, some crops. Oh, this thing has also the tractors and fine art and ecology, all kinds of things. So it was quite something. And one year when I went, I decided to go to what I call the demonstration building, where new products are performed for people. So it's sort of like those TV sales pitches, you know, you should get our knives, you know, look how they cut a tomato. You know, it's that kind of thing. But I rounded a corner after kind of giggling and shaking my head at a few of the other performers. I rounded a corner to a sea of sewing machines. And one of them, at least, if not more, but one caught my attention. No one was attending to it, and it was stitching out a Donald Duck in what was clearly an embroidery hoop, but it was being done on a machine that otherwise looked like a sewing machine. I didn't care that it was hands-free, and I sure didn't care it was Donald Duck. But the blue of his midi shirt was the most amazing blue I had ever seen in my life. It was the most ultra, ultramarine blue I had ever seen. You know, I look at the background behind you and the blue, I'll call it a wimple across the woman. Take that and key it up. Mm-hmm. Take some of the yellow out and key it up to being the most amazing sapphire you have ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
Except it was on Donald Duck. But I stood absolutely transfixed. The machine was making a lovely rhythmic noise, and as sewing machines do, but it's, you know, it's a little bit more when you're doing embroidery because it's a faster thing, not as much stop and go as when we're sewing. But it is that rhythmic thing, kind of like a locomotive, which is very soothing.
Yeah.
I love that. And that color. And I knew right then and there I was in big trouble and that I had to do this. I had no idea what I was getting into because I'm not an aficionado of monograms and teddy bears on shirts. I certainly love embroidery. And like most women of my age, I'm in my 70s, you know, yeah, I was taught to embroider as a kid, and I have embroidered, hand embroidered on and off through the years, sometimes for fine art, more times just because it feels nice and it looks nice, and then I don't do anything with it, but, you know, I like doing it. But this was different. I knew in my guts that there was something that I could do with this that felt important. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what it was. I had no idea. And so I started applying for grants for the machine. That didn't come through. So I got a 5-year same as cash loan for the first machine. So I didn't have to pay any interest on it. I just paid for it out of cash flow and started to learn what to do, just even with commercial designs. And then I did get a grant for the first piece of software to design my own. And it confused the heck out of me. And I am techie. I've been working with computers just for administration stuff and for my artwork sometimes since the beginning, really? I mean, I had computer classes when I was 16, and I'm 73. So it's been with me a long time. I've never had the fear that a lot of people approach the machines with. They're just tools.
Yeah.
They're just tools. And they were around my house growing up in various forms because my father was an engineer and he loved all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the first graphing calculator, which I never fell for. I don't like numbers very much.
You're not the only one.
No. They don't love me. They don't. I can operate them, but they don't have a lot of meaning for me.
No.
And, they aren't good signifiers. So I wasn't afraid of the computer, but I didn't understand the structure. And I worked like crazy to fulfill the exhibition that was part of this grant. And I took classes on Craftsy. I found books from Europe, from the United States that were all really about designing those teddy bears.
Yeah.
But I had not understood what was involved in those designs. And they're fairly complex, actually. They have to be built in layers in order to develop stability. And there's all this stuff, stabilizers, which are different kinds of pelons and things. Because otherwise, if you don't put that underneath your design, and this can be a feature, of course, you know, the fabric goes into a crinkle mess.
Yeah.
Now, you obviously can, as a sculptor, I can look at that and go, what could I do with that? And I have worked a little with that. But eventually, you know, I fulfilled my grant. And then immediately afterwards, I bought better software. What I had gotten with the grant was the only Macintosh native software for digitizing. And it was one of the most unstable pieces of software I've ever used because Macs don't usually crash.
No.
Not since the early days. I mean, there was a period of time when they did, but they don't usually crash. And it was crash and burn, you know, right to the end. And by the time I fulfilled the grant, I knew I had to get a PC computer and the PC native software. And I work with Hatch Software, which is, it's part of the Wilcom company, but it's very much like a cross between Adobe Photoshop and Adobe Illustrator.
Oh, okay.
For the design people out there, that will make some sense. Years ago, I took a weekend intensive at a community college about Adobe Photoshop because there was something I just wasn't understanding, and it was the layer system.
Yeah.
And that's really what you're employing in these softwares for embroidery. And the other thing that you get to think about and that simplifies it just tremendously in concept is that geometrically you're just drawing straight lines.
Yeah.
Each stitch is two holes with a connector.
Yeah.
Basic geometry.
Yeah.
So you're working with the placement of those little lines, and you make them little and you can make curves, you know. And within the software, they have developed some algorithms for you to do that, very much like Photoshop. You can build and select fills like you do in Photoshop.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can make them more or less transparent, like you do in Photoshop. And you can begin to build them one on top of another. And as I began to understand that and understand the role of transparency and how to achieve it, I began to recognize unbelievable color interaction.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable. But it was beyond what I had expected. So, you know, I went back and studied Albers and Itten. I love Itten. Itten's always made sense to me in terms of color studies. And I thought, no, it's more than that. So then I studied the thread. And just for for my own enjoyment. I am a hand spinner, so I know how to make thread.
Oh,
I'm actually okay. Pretty expert. I can even on a good day spin cotton, and cotton's hard, so that's only on a good day I can do.
And that. And you make that yourself, because that was a question I had. Do you make the thread yourself, or is this something you have to?
No, you have to buy it. It's under so much tension.
Yeah.
And so the typical embroidery thread these days is polyester trilobal thread. Rayon used to be the standard, but the colors fade in rayon.
Mm-hmm.
And rayon isn't very strong. It's beautiful. The sheen is gorgeous. It's a sheen much more akin to satin. So it's a smooth sheen. But the polyester has a sparkle to it. And I tried to figure out why it sparkled. It's an extruded thread. I love science. I can't help it. It's an extruded thread. And I found out it's called trilobal. So it has at least three plies. But these plies are extruded. And I learned more and more about it. And what I discovered was that it fundamentally has a triangular cross-section. So if you think about how color works, and as a painter, you know this too,
yep.
It's a reflection off a surface, right?
Yep.
And if your surface has three sides, it's going to reflect in at least three directions. And each reflection, depending on the angle, is a slightly different hue of the established hue. So if you have that ultramarine blue thread of Donald's midi, what you're actually seeing is almost all the blues you can imagine across the spectrum.